Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. I am so excited to once again be joined by Tom Dawkin, who is the dog trainer extraordinaire. He has over 40 years of dog training experience, not only with hunting dogs, gun dogs, but also in obedience training. And Tom Dawkin owns Dawkin's Oak Ridge Kennels. And Tom, welcome to the podcast again.
Hey, nice to be here, Laura. Thanks for having me on.
Well, the last time we were chatting, we were talking about getting your dog ready for hunting season and the things you can do during the summer to make sure they're conditioned and ready to go. And there are so many things to talk about when it comes to dog training, and so many people are needing advice, me included, that I thought I need to have Tom back on the podcast quickly because, you know, just the other day I bumped into this woman on the sidewalk who was chatting with me about my dog Bacon, and she shared with me that she has a Chesapeake Bay Retriever lab mix that has a lot of insecurities, and she was overwhelmed and don't know what to do because she now is hiding the dog in the house when someone comes over because the dog's showing aggression, things like that. And I actually just gave her your name and your number. I said, you need to call Tom Dawkin because that you're going to need to have some professional training done. Otherwise, you're going to have an issue on your hands. So I know lots of people are in need of basic obedience training tips.
Sure. Yeah. You know, not only, I mean, we train a lot of, like I was mentioning before we came on, we train a lot of different breeds for obedience, just family pets. But, you know, to be honest with you, I would say 98% of even the hunting dogs we train now, they're house dogs. I mean, so, you know, they have to have that obedience training as well because they're being, you know, they're being handled a lot more than, you know, if a dog just lived outside back in the kennel. I mean, you know that if you have a dog that's living in the house, it's got to go out periodically. It's got to come when called. There's just a lot of interaction. And if they're hard to handle, it just makes a lot of work. So there's definitely things that people could do without a lot of effort, you know, to kind of get things back on track again.
Yeah. So I thought we could go over, you know, maybe depending on how much time we have, because I know the list is kind of endless, but some of your top five obedience skills that should be trained and maybe some tips for people that can work with their dogs at home. And I know one thing that you are big on and a lot of dog trainers really believe is place training. So having a place in the house that is kind of the dog's spot.
Right. And for people who don't really know what that is, let's just say you have a dog bed. You know, nowadays most people have a dog bed for their dog in the house. So It would really evolve into just if I want you to go to a spot, you know, go to that spot. And so we start even with little puppies, or you could start with an adult dog. You know, with a little puppy, 7 weeks old, 8 weeks old, somewhere in there, you know, we can do some treat training. And I'm not a treat trainer all the way through training, but once a little puppy will take a little kibble of food out of your hand, they'll follow that hand no matter where it goes. So place training, you'd have them follow it up onto the place that you want them to get on, whether it's a dog bed, whatever it might be. And then they get that reward when they get up on it. And you're saying that place command, and they'll start relating to that. It is such a nice command, especially for somebody who's in the house. So let's say as time goes on, not only do you treat train, but then you get the leash. Once they understand to go to that spot, when you tell them to go there, then you use a leash to say, all right, now that you're on that spot, you have to stay on that spot. And then that's when you start getting to reinforce that, yes, you're over there, but you're not supposed to get off of that spot. So that comes in so handy, you know, for a house dog or a family dog. It's like, all right, it's supper time. Now we can either put you in a travel crate or put you in another room, or we can have a spot, you know, somewhat close to where we're going to be dining, where we tell you to go to that spot, you're out of the way and you stay there. Or if somebody's going to come to the door, you know, and everybody sees this, you know, all of a sudden the doorbell rings or somebody knocks on the door, you know, Bacon, he's not a very big, you know, dog, but, you know, he becomes like a 500-pound dog and wants to, you know, I'm not picking on him, but, you know, they got to get to the door. They got to see everybody. They're jumping all over everybody. So that place command, if somebody knocks on the door, if you've done this and put some time in, if I say place, It means go to your spot. You can answer the door. You can do whatever you need to do. And the dog understands it. So that's a great, it is just a great command. And we use that not only in hunting dog training, but in house training as well. So it's, yeah. And I would say most of your trainers nowadays are gonna have some form of that command, you know, that they can use.
Yeah, I think it's a really handy training tool to use, specifically when you're eating dinner and the dog is either, you know, pawing at your foot for something to eat or really kind of on putting their face on the table and things like that. They're able to be near the family for dinner, but of course they're not necessarily overstepping their boundary when it comes to begging for food and things like that. So yeah. Place training is huge.
Yeah, I normally tell people you do not have to set another place setting for your dog. I mean, he can learn to go to a spot. Yeah, for sure. And you know, think about people who have seen Raven over the years with your dad. I mean, when she's sitting next to him on a hay bale, when she was at game fair and stuff like that, she was sitting on a chair. That is just an extension of that place command. So yeah, it's way valuable.
Very much. And one thing I know that trainers like yourself and people who are working with place or kennel up, if a dog's paw, even one paw, is off the mat, that's kind of their way of saying, I'm ready to get out of the place, right? So are you kind of a stickler when it comes to making sure all four paws are in the dog bed or on the mat where they're not trying to like sneak out per se?
Yeah, when we teach it, what we do is we teach it on something elevated that's high. So let's just say a dog that's, you know, 40 pounds, 50 pounds, we'll use that just from a size standpoint, we'll have that place at least 14 inches off the ground and teach them to get up on that spot to begin with, because then they understand that, you know, getting off of it, they made a full effort to get off. So if you're going to give some discipline, depending on the dog's temperament, some discipline to get back on there, they made it real obvious that I made a big effort to get off. Now, if you just practice that command with something flat on the ground, sure, they're going to put one foot off and then maybe another. And then they've got 3 feet off, but they go, you know what? I've got one toenail touching it. So does that qualify? And they'll all do it. I mean, totally. They'll all do it. So they're seeing if you will enforce it, you know, and get up there. And then eventually what they'll do is they know they're supposed to be on there. When you're not looking, they won't come running over to you, but they'll just slide off it and not want to be noticed. So, yeah, I mean, they're like kids. They're like kids. They're going to just, okay, well, how far is this going to go? How far is it going to go? So it really depends on how good do you want them to be. And then that puts that puts it all back on you. Are you willing to get up from the table or whatever you're doing and reinforce that you have to stay on there? And then when you first start that, don't expect them to stay on that spot for 20 minutes or 15 minutes. Get them to stay on that spot for a minute at a time. Then gradually you can just make it a little longer, a little longer, a little longer. And the younger they are, the harder it is to, you know, to have them do anything for any length of time. So work within, you know, kind of the age structure of the dog you're working with too.
Sure. I bought one of those elevated mesh place or mats, as you said, for Bacon. And he loves it. He actually sleeps on it now. And we use that when we're eating dinner. And, you know, there are still times where he bounces right off of it thinking he's going to get a bite to eat of something, but then I get up and I ask him to get back in his place and he'll get a little snack if he does. But they really seem to like that elevated kind of mesh, I guess, mat, if you will.
It's always better, to be honest with you, if it's elevated, because they know when they're off of it and they're not constantly testing and sneaking off of it. So I always say it's the best way to go. You know, you're going to have to get up less and reinforce it less if it's a little bit more elevated. Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, when you reinforce it, you know, if you have a leash on and know you have to get back up there, you want them to know that as time goes on with all their obedience commands, first you teach the command, then you do it repetitiously. So you go, okay, he really knows what I want. Then any correction that they would get with a leash to perform it can only come after you've spent enough time so they understand it. So you can't start off by disciplining a dog if they do not understand the command. That's only the fair thing to do.
That's true. I've always thought, you know, you can't always tell the dog what not to do by saying no. You also have to show the dog what you want them to do. So I always feel like that's a really important part of training, because a lot of people get frustrated and they're just giving correction, 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 especially with heel or on the leash. But how much time have they spent really training and enforcing what you actually are asking them to do?
Right. I mean, you know, they have to know when they're doing it right. I mean, if you don't include something, like for me, it would be good dog, you know, when they performed it properly. So it makes it way more apparent to them as time goes on. When they've done it wrong, it's way more apparent when they get a correction that I got a correction for making the mistake of not doing it. And then when they do the command and they do it properly, yeah, they need to know. I mean, it's something that you can't always be disciplining if they don't understand what the right thing is to do. And if you do things properly and just find a level gradually of a correction, you know, you start light and work your way up to where you go, okay, my particular dog needs this much correction with the leash in order for them to go, I believe you. I don't want to make the mistake again. And I think that that's what most people, when they get to some of these commands, and I would say probably all of them, is that once the dog knows it, finding the level of correction with the leash where the dog goes, I don't want to make that mistake. And I always tell people, you don't start off with a heavy correction. Just start off and gradually work your way up. You don't have to yell. Just work your way up with a correction with the leash till you see the dog acknowledge that, okay, I don't want to do it again. Because they're all different. And I can't tell anybody what level they need for their dog, because every dog's temperament is different, just like ours is.
Yes. And, you know, that's a good point. We can switch over to leash training too, because, you know, there are working with dogs that are very confident dogs. They, you know, bounce back from corrections really easily. And then there are some dogs out there that are very, nervous dogs or insecure dogs. And sometimes those are almost the hardest to train, I would think, just because sometimes slight or little corrections can shut them down.
Yeah. And then, you know, they're, you know, socializing. We haven't talked about socializing, but let's just say people who are getting a new puppy, having a dog that's extremely socialized, not just in your house, but taking them everywhere you can, having them socialized to the point where they are confident in themselves no matter where you take them, they actually will be easier for you to work with. Because a dog that maybe, you know, is insecure out of its home environment especially, they're always kind of looking for something to go wrong, versus a dog that's well socialized, been around a lot of people, been out of the home, been on lots of car rides and everything. They just absorb the training better because they're not worried about every step that they're going to take. So for people who are starting off with a new dog, you need to take them everywhere you possibly can. Kind of like, let's go to a soccer game, go to a Little League baseball game. You know, you've had Bacon to Game Fair, and you've had him everywhere. Oh, yeah. So he's just like, well, whatever, you know, we're just in a new place. So having them mentally stable just makes a dog easier to train. And if you have an older dog that's showing signs of, you know, they're really insecure, they will not get better with that unless you really get them out and find lots of areas that you can go where they're having contact, you know, with other people. Even if you have like a little main street or something like that, have them on a leash, walk up and down Main Street, you know, and the smaller the puppy, everybody wants to come up and pet your puppy. If it's an older dog, probably not going to happen. So Tina's got a little puppy that she's going to get next week for herself.
Aww.
So, you know, she's, you know, it's not like, okay, well, you train dogs, so this puppy's going to be socialized. You know, her daily routine will be put the puppy in the car, go into town, go into Main Street, especially from 7 weeks to 10 weeks, go into the hardware store, go into the bank, take that puppy anywhere you can go business-wise where people are going to see it, because they will gravitate towards a little puppy and give it, you know, the nurturing that it wants. When it gets to be about 3 months to 5 months old, then it's, you've lost that window, because most people go, yeah, can you keep that puppy from jumping on me? I really don't want to see him. So anybody getting a new puppy, that's really, really important.
How do you feel about socializing puppies with other dogs that, you know, at dog parks and things like that? I hear both sides of the coin on that. And I also see, just from basic obedience too, and we can get to the leash training and such in just a second, because I'm going to thank one of our sponsors first. But before that, I also see a lot of leash aggression on the sidewalks when I'm walking dogs. So I want to touch on those topics in just a second. But first, a word from Voyager Saunas.
Hey there. Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. You know what? It's time to relax, and Voyager can help. Voyager builds custom saunas for your home, backyard, business, and you know what? The pick of the Shirk family, we love Voyager's mobile saunas that go anywhere we want to go. Clear grade cedar benches, spray foam insulation, Kuma wood-fired stoves, or Hilo electric heaters. These are Finnish-influenced hand-built saunas that will last a lifetime. They're constructed with care by the hometown Voyager's team. You know, the Shirk family loves our Voyager mobile sauna. Voyager, a Minnesota movement influenced by Finnish culture. Visit voyagersaunas.com and get ready to distress. Trust me, it works.
Hey, I'm really picky when it comes to my drinking water, and I have the reverse osmosis drinking water system from Kinetico, and I love it. It takes out contaminants in the water, it removes chlorine, and most important, it tastes great, which is the one thing I'm probably most picky on, is how does my water taste? So having Kinetico also means that I use less plastic water bottles, which we all know is a definite bonus for our environment. For more information, visit Kinetico.com to find a dealer near you.
Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Beef. Grass-fed beef right here in Minnesota, you know. We make a career talking about clean water, native habitat, and some of the best environmental practices. That's exactly why I'm so excited about Thousand Hills. You know, it is locally raised beef done differently. You see, Thousand Hills uses what is called regenerative agriculture to raise their cattle. Those beef cows, they graze in fields of wild grasses, and they move between a lot of different fields of grass. It is a sustainable ecosystem free of synthetic fertilizers and chemical herbicides. It's a system of agriculture that promotes clean water, natural grasses, and the best beef you've tasted. It's beef raised the right way. You can check out Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Grass-Fed Beef to understand their regenerative agricultural practices and fall in love with Thousand Hills beef.
All right, Tom, there's so many things to talk about when it comes to dog obedience, but just from my own observation, I'll say, when I have talked to people out and about and with puppies, you know, a lot of people want to socialize them with other dogs. Let's start there. Are you a fan of socializing a lot with other dogs at the dog parks and things like that to build confidence in puppies?
I think you have to know something initially about the other dogs. Because if I have a puppy and I want a puppy to be confident in itself, the last thing I want to do is have it come up to an adult dog and have it get slammed to the ground on first contact. So, you know, first impressions are really big. So now you have this puppy who every dog it sees is fearful that it's gonna, gonna whack him. And that's not good. So it's important to know who you're introducing that puppy to. You know, a dog park, you might have, you know, how many dogs are just off of a leash, right? So yep. It can be a bit chaotic for a young puppy to be around that. So I would prefer to introduce it to a dog that you know personally, and I'd have the other dog on a leash, and I'd really, you got to mother hen them a little bit when they're really little to make sure something bad doesn't happen, because you can break their confidence really quick. And so you really have to know that. To just throw a puppy into a dog park and then go, well, I hope you survive, so to speak, that's not doing the right thing for your puppy. So, and you see all kinds of personalities. If you do go to a dog park, you'll see ones that, hey, I just want to play and get along with everybody. And then you'll maybe see one who, you know, wants to run roughshod over the other dogs. So I think you have to know that, you know, before going into it. So, and it's not necessarily the size of the dog. It doesn't have to be a big dog that's going to bully. It can be a smaller dog that wants to bully, you know, your dog as well. So just, you got to get a good feel for it more than anything else. And they're going to have to, you know, learn to be around other dogs. I would just pick and choose a little bit. You know, if you went to a doggy daycare where they have playtime, Yeah. You know, they have somebody there evaluating, you know, if it's something that you're going to go to regularly, they'll have somebody there evaluating your dog and know the dogs that are in that doggy daycare that have playtime. They know who can be out and who can't.
Yep.
And it's their job to evaluate that. So it you know, it doesn't turn into, you know, a battle zone out there. And dogs like to interact. I mean, they're social animals. So it's not a bad situation, but it's up to you as the owner to go. Let's make sure these first encounters are positive. Yep.
Yeah, very true. It can happen fast. And mm-hmm. you know, sometimes when they're puppies, you may even want to start, they can break up dog parks into the small dog side or the big dog side. And you always try to like kind of observe the energy in the park before I even go into one, just to see if there is a dog that's highly dominant or bullying other dogs. And I may choose actually to not even go in, which is also okay. You know, I don't ever blindly go into a dog park myself. I really kind of really catch the energy of the park itself. And if there's a lot of gentle energy with all the dogs, then we go ahead and go in. But so that's really, really good advice. And my other question for you is, let's talk a little bit about leash training. And, you know, of course, leash training with comes a set of getting used to the leash, but also heel. And then last, I really want to touch on dealing with leash aggression, either if it's from coming from your dog or if you're encountering a dog on a walk that is aggressive towards your dog. Like, what are some tips and pointers regarding leash in general?
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's going to need, I mean, if you're going to train and work with your dog, you're going to have a leash. And not only do you have to have a leash, but if you want control of your dog, you got to have the leash that actually works in conjunction with, and I call it pressure on and pressure off. So let's say if you just have a leash, and most all of these leashes have like a little clip that you hook onto something. If you're training your dog and you just have a standard nylon or leather collar that has a little, you know, hook on it that you clip onto, you're really, you know, if you have a dog that wants to pull, which most dogs, the biggest problem you have just walking them is pulling. That's not going to work. And, you know, one thing I see a lot of nowadays, too, is I see harnesses.
Oh, my gosh. They're everywhere. And they're the worst.
You know what you put on a horse to pull a wagon?
A harness, pretty much.
Yeah, a harness. I don't know where this all came from. And I'm not, you know, trying to bash a product. But it just gives them a more license to want to pull. And,
yes.
You know, that's no fun. You take a dog for a walk. I don't care if they're 25 or 30 pounds. If they're dragging you everywhere you go, you're going to start finding reasons not to go. And that's not good for the dog either. So you have to have something like a slip lead. I'll call it a slip lead, that when you pull on the leash, it'll tighten up. And when the dog is in proper position, it'll loosen up around the neck. So it's called pressure on and off. I do something with my little puppies, you know, day one, when I pick them up and hold on to them, I'll have them in my arms. And they're normally good for a few seconds, and then they go, I want to get down. I want to get on the ground. So what they'll do is they'll kind of fight, struggle a little bit to get down. I'll just put a little, I'm holding on to them now. I got them, and I'll put a little pressure against them. Well, they don't like that. But, and as soon as they relax, I'll just let the pressure off. I'm still holding on to them. Now this is a little puppy. And what I'm looking for is, if you want to struggle, there's going to be pressure on you. As soon as you relax, that pressure comes off of you. And they learn it. I'll pick that puppy up 10, 15, 20 times a day, pick it up, hold it. If it struggles to get down, I put pressure on it. As soon as it relaxes, I'll take that pressure off. So they'll learn after a day or two. When you pick them up, they'll just relax in your arms because they don't want to feel that pressure. And then I put them on the ground. So they also learn that if they want to get on the ground, if they relax, I'll put them down there. So they're learning to release pressure, right? I can release it by just relaxing. So that's what your leash is. It should be, there's pressure when you're not in the right position, and there's pressure when you're proper. And to be honest with you, Laura, when just walking a dog at heel, after you've done it a little bit and you, let's say you have the right equipment, the right leash, most everybody will not reinforce it with a correction on that leash. So if your dog wants to pull, don't correct it when he's pulling. Right before he's going to hit the end of that leash, give it a little tug. and then see if he responds to that. If he doesn't respond to it, just increase that tug a little more. You don't have to yell. And if he wants to lead again, tug it a little bit more. I have people come back to me and go, I couldn't believe what it finally took, you know, correction-wise, before the dog actually acknowledged me and responded to me. And all I can say to them is, well, your dog just told you what it's going to take.
Yep.
So if your dog keeps doing the same thing over and over and over again, and you keep, you know, pulling on the leash, don't pull, give it a tug. They're saying to you, that's not enough. That's not enough. That's not enough. And you have to find the level if you want any consistency on heeling, sitting, laying down, coming when called, when you're using this equipment, you know, to get any kind of consistency. So, you know, I don't care if you have a T-bone steak, and if they see a squirrel running or something like that, and you go, I'll give you a T-bone steak if you don't pull on the leash or chase that, it ain't going to work.
Yep.
So, you know, so they just have to know that, you know,
there's no negotiating is what you're saying.
Yeah. And that happens because they're a pack animal. I mean, if they had a pack leader and they were trying to push that pack leader, at some point, it would be a warning, and it would be a warning. And then that pack leader would give a correction. So they know, okay, here's about how far I can push this. So we just have to think of them. We love them. I love my dogs. They live in the house with us, but they really need to know where that line is. And then if they find that line, you're not going to continually have to go there because they'll know where the line is. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's the best way to explain it.
It does. And I think a lot of times people expect the line to be respected only when they're outside, and they don't do a lot of, having the dog really do the obedience training inside the house too, such as the place training and mm-hmm. having a lot of structure with making sure that you are, you know, a pack leader inside your house, I guess, as well as outside. And don't you think a lot of it starts in the house even before you start on the walk, so they have the respect for, you know, your commands?
100%. Let's just say the easiest thing. Somebody says, I don't have time to train. Well, if your dog lives in the house, you're going to take it outside. So if you have it sit every time you open the door to put it outside, and when it comes in, you have it sit before it comes in. I mean, that takes 2 seconds, right?
Yep.
But you're setting like, here's a routine. Here's my structure. Here's what we're going to do. If you don't have good control in a confined environment, which it's, you know, that's better for you, forget about having control once you get out in an unconfined area. And then also we haven't talked about, you know, that's with a 6-foot leash on. And when you get outside, especially with these younger dogs, you need to have what we call a check cord. Basically, it's a longer leash, 30 feet, maybe 50 feet. So you can start reinforcing like, hey, you have to come when called, you know, when you're outside too. You know, so if you're a little distance away from me, you're going to use that just like you would indoors. But, you know, for us, obedience training isn't just about running and chasing dogs around out in the field trying to catch them. It's all done in a confined environment to begin with. Then we gradually start getting out, you know, to where there's more distractions, more things going on. And then you need to practice with distractions too. We always train without any distractions, so the dog understands what we want. But then we'll start bringing distractions into the training purposely, so we can say, yeah, no, you have to listen no matter what. No, there's another dog here. You have to listen. There's another person coming by. There's somebody running past you. So we actually set those situations up because they have to know that no matter what's going on, they have to have the attention on you. So I think people try to avoid some of those things, but those are some of the best opportunities to actually go, oh, I see a distraction over there. Let's go over there, and I'm going to have him. He has to sit, or he has to heel past that thing, or he has to do that. That's the way of getting them to the point where they're bulletproof. And I think a lot of people want to avoid that because they don't want to see the dog fail. Well, I mean, we only learn by failing.
Isn't that the truth? I see that a lot out in public too, where I almost observe a lot of people are afraid to give a correction to their dog in public in a way. And it's giving a correction doesn't mean that you're doing something really extremely harsh to the dog. You're just saying, cut it out or sit down, you know, things like that. And what that happens is, for instance, if their dog is getting overly excited to see another dog, for instance, or wants to jump up on people when they meet them on the sidewalk, you see a lot of people just kind of drag the dog away, which actually doesn't teach the dog anything, I wouldn't think. So it's a really good point, is letting your dog fail when they're out in the environment so you can give the correction so they can learn something. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you know, when we have, and that's a good example there, because you're out in public. When we have a dog that we're, you know, one of our own personal dogs that we're starting off with here, when we'll set it up where we have somebody just knock on the door, go outside, knock on the door. And that's when they go, okay, I'm going to go crazy. And then we can get whatever correction is. No, you've got to go to that place. And then that we'll have, you know, maybe it'll be Tina like, okay, knock on the door again, because I've got the dog on place. And the dog goes, I'm getting up and I'm going over there. A correction comes again. Knock on the door again. Pretty soon the dog goes, oh, okay, this is a setup, isn't it? Yeah, it is. But we're actually practicing the things that are going to come up. You know, because if you just try to do these things on the spur of the moment, now somebody's at the door. Are you going to dog train while somebody's at the door, the UPS, you're not going to dog train. And your dog knows that. So we set up those things to, now that knock on the door means I'm getting set up. And they go, no, I think probably just being over here on my place is probably the best thing. So, and those are just things from a dog trainer standpoint. We want them at some point to be making mistakes. We just do. We want to teach them and be fair to them, do it repetitiously enough. Now let's set up these scenarios, but then we're going to praise them a lot. Okay, yes. Man, you made a great decision. Yeah, good. You stayed right there. You know, so once again, it's not all discipline. You have to praise the right behavior too.
Very true. And you brought up another subject about coming when called. And I want to touch base on that really quick, because I think that's an important one when dogs are in the yard or God knows where else, running around the neighborhood. But before we get there, first, a quick note from Minnesota DNR. Minnesota's wildlife management areas are an array of lands all across Minnesota. There are approximately 1,400 wildlife management areas that are important for the protection of wildlife and Minnesota's outdoor recreation opportunities. To find out more about Minnesota's wildlife management areas, go to mndnr.gov/WMAS.
Start planning your fall hunt in North Dakota at legendarynd.com. You know, North Dakota is home to more than 800,000 plots hunting acres. Those acres are private land that is open to public hunting, and the plots map guides show you exactly where all that land sits. You know, North Dakota's ringneck pheasant crowing counts are up 15% this year, and of course, that takes good habitat. The state is also home to an estimated 2.9 million breeding ducks. North Dakota, it's an absolute outdoor oasis just waiting. Bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy, right now.
All right, Tom, let's, with our last tip of the podcast here, and you can let me know too if there's one really important one that we haven't covered yet. But you mentioned something about what you called the check cord. And I purchased one of those for Bacon. They're actually really cool. And you use it to teach the command, you know, come when you're outside per se. And is that the best way to teach that command? Or do you have any other tips on how to get your dog to respond if they're darting down the street?
Absolutely. So here's what I'm going to do. Let's just say you've started off with your puppy and he knows that if he comes, you'll give him a little kibble. I mean, he knows to come to your hand, give him a kibble, but that's not going to last for a length of time, and it's not going to be reliable when you get outside and get distractions. So here's a little drill. So remember now, check cord would be, let's say it's 30 to 50 feet long. So here's a little drill to get that dog starting to respond to that cord. So what I'm going to do, I'll start walking the dog, and I'm just saying, we're out, kind of out and about. And I see the dog's kind of heading in one direction. Right before, and I want a little bit of slack in the line, I'm going to turn myself and I'm going to walk 180 degrees the opposite direction. And right before he gets to the end of that cord, I'll give it a tug. And I just keep, and I start walking the opposite direction. Now, they're most likely going to get out in front of you again right before they get. I don't want it to get tight. I want it to get to just about, there's slack in it. I'm going to turn. I'm going to go 180 and give a tug. And I'm going to walk in that direction. Now the dog's going to go out in front. I'm going to turn right before, right before it gets tight. I'm going to tug it and give it enough tug so they understand that you're moving. Now, pretty soon, two things are going to happen. You do this drill a little bit. They're going to start paying attention to where you are. But more importantly, because most of the time they want to get out in front of you. Well, to get out in front of you, they have to run right past you. Okay, so by turning and then turning and turning, pretty soon that can turn into your come command. But big thing is you're going to find that the dog is going to be watching for your directional change, and then you can turn that into a come command. But the check cord, get outside. It's just your longer leash. So anything you did with a 6-foot leash, you do have to have a long cord when you get outside. Otherwise, you're just going to be chasing your dog all over the neighborhood.
And you can find these check cords, on Amazon. They're really cheap. They're made out of nylon. It's very lightweight. I mean, it's probably like $10, $14. So very easy to get your hands on one, and they're super handy. Do you also start with that, to get the dog's attention with the check cord before you start working on heel? So they want to follow you? Is that how you technically start training?
Yeah, and I think especially with a little puppy. I mean, to be honest with you, by the time they're 3 months old, they know you can't catch them. I don't care how fast you are. If you're an Olympic sprinter, forget it. You're not going to catch them. So for a while, you're going to be able to puppy, 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 and they're going to come to you. At one point, they're going to go, not nope. Today. And they're going to look at you, and then they're going to go, you're not going to catch me. So, we're going to have these little guys, probably by the time they're 10 weeks old, they're going to be dragging a really lightweight check cord, lightweight, because you don't want them dragging something that's too heavy. But we always want to just be able to know that I have control of you, and I want them to know that I always have control. And then, as that dog goes through, the puppy starts graduating, get a little bit more, we've never lost control. And that's the biggest problem. It's like, well, I used the check cord for a day and he was pretty good. Now I'm going to take it off him for a while. So in order to program them to know that you have control over them, it can't be on today, off tomorrow, on today, off tomorrow. It has to be over a longer period of time that they understand that no matter what I'm doing, you've got control. And you can let them drag the cord, provided that they're not running 100 yards away. All you have to do is get to the end of the cord. So you don't have to actually walk at the dog, if they're not behaving, because they know when you walk at them, I can just sidestep you. Just walk to the end of the cord. And they'll think that, oh, you're not walking towards me. Then bend down and grab it. And then give a correction with the cord if you have a dog that understands it. And they go, oh, how did you do that? I mean, you didn't actually catch me. So, but the worst thing that you can do is be out there and calling them 15, 20 times and you can't reinforce it. And they learn that. I will never call a dog to me if I can't enforce it. I'll do anything to try to get them to come my way, but give them a command. I'll do anything, turn my back, walk away. Like I don't care. And they come running by, but I never want them to keep hearing the command over and over and over again without something happening. Here's just one last thing, Laura. When you're training and you're reinforcing a command, give it once. And if you have to give it a second time, whatever correction is necessary, do it. And that'll make you a good handler, because you're not going to get caught into, just saying it over and over again. Because they're just going to turn you off. Kind of like kids.
Very true. And another thing too, you know, you are obviously a good proponent of just using heel, sit, place. And I've heard a lot of people, you know, people like to talk to the dogs, me included. I'm always talking to Bacon, but I think, you know, is it true? You know, it is true that dogs obviously don't speak English. So when you're giving commands, is it best just to keep it to one word versus like Bacon, sit down, you got to lay down, Bacon, you know, things like that. And you do hear people doing that.
I might say that once in a while to Tina is like, yep. What part of that sentence was the actual command? But, you know, and we, you know, and as dog owners too, you know, they're around you. You know,
of they course. Get,
you know, all the time. You might have a tendency to just kind of add the command into, you know, a lot of different things. But, you know, less is better, you know, especially when you're starting things out. As dogs get older, they start to, you know, understand what the command is. And they'll, to be honest with you, they'll go off of your body language and stuff as they get old enough. But, you know, simple commands, don't add a whole lot to it. You know, the basics: come, sit, stay, heel, down, place, you know, just stay with it. And then teach one command at a time. And when you have that one down, you know, relatively well, add another one, but always come back and review. Always come back and review commands that your dog knows. You know, all these sports teams, do they have spring training or fall training or whatever it is? They do, and they're professionals. So what makes you think that your dog wouldn't need to have, you know, be tuned up a little bit? And you're going to recognize, if you've done a good job, you'll recognize when they're slipping. They're just not, they're not doing things like they should. Well, get the leash back on, you know, put them through a few basics.
And of course, I keep having questions. I have one last question for you. When it comes to training sessions, when you're going to spend, you know, 15, 30 minutes doing some significant training with your dog, do you find it's best that you exercise them beforehand so some of the energy is burnt off so they can concentrate better? Or do you feel like that doesn't matter?
No, we always, you know, especially, you know, starting off, we'll always exercise them a little bit. You know, just let them exercise, because what you're saying is, this is your time. Now this is my time. So there's a definite, your time is this. But then we'll also cue the dog when we're taking a break. So our break word for them is okay. Okay means it's your time to do what you want to do. That means when we give a command, now it's my time. But, you know, if I'm working with a little puppy, I might do something for 15 seconds and take a break. And then, you know, 15 seconds and a break, 15 seconds and a break. And then as time goes on, as they get a little older, that the work time will increase, you know, and then the breaks, there'll be maybe less breaks during the training. So you always start with something fun, some exercise, take breaks in between your little sessions, and then always end with something positive. You know, if you end with something positive, whatever your dog likes to do, then the first thing that they're going to think about when you take him out the next day is he's going to start and we're going to do something positive to begin with. That way your dog will have a good attitude, you know, through the whole thing. And that our job as trainers is to train somebody's dog, but send them back the same dog personality wise that they had. And the only way you could do that is by giving that dog enough free time. But then, you know, work time is work, free time is free, but always ending positive. Even if you're having a bad day training, just end with something positive. The next day, you're going to start over again.
Always true. They say never go to bed angry, right? It's kind of the same thing with dog training. Always end same on a deal. Positive note.
Yep, 100%.
Well, Tom, if people want to find you for more information on obedience training, gun dog training, you name it, where can they find you?
Dawkins Oak Ridge Kennels, the Facebook page, or they can go online and they give a call down to the kennel. Somebody can set them up or answer any questions that you might have just to kind of find out what your needs might be.
Awesome. I cannot thank you enough for spending another half hour on the Minnesota Bound podcast. There are so much valuable information you have to share when it comes to dog training and the millions of dog owners that are out there. We're always hungry for new ways to have our canine companions, of course, be our best friends in the most well-behaved way. So appreciate your time.
Always happy to help. Thanks for having me on, Laura.
Thank you. Also, thank you to Voyager Saunas, Kinetico, Minnesota DNR, Minnesota Propane, North Dakota Tourism, and Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed. And last but not least, don't forget to introduce a kid to the great outdoors.